Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson. I am an award-winning and best-selling author, TEDx speaker, poet storyteller, filmmaker, mentor, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking up authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors, sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. Hey, welcome to this edition of The Creative Spark. You're going to love today's guest. Jim Meskimen is an actor, impressionist, who has been seen in 5 feature films by director Ron Howard and on TV in Friends, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Margo's Got Money Troubles, The Big Door Prize, Parks and Recreation, and NCIS, among many others. His impressions were featured on The View, Fox and Friends, The Tonight Show, and America's Got Talent, to name a few. He currently appears in Landman on Paramount Plus and Chicago Fire. Jim is also a very talented artist, live performer, voice actor, poet, and overall solid human being. Thank you very much for joining me. I had to add solid. That last sentence. It wasn't in your official bio, but...
Yeah. Overall solid. That's good. Solid human being. I'm a human being through and through.
Yeah, literally.
You take a core sample of me, all you'll find is human being.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. I feel good. Yeah. Busy, interesting period of my life. I'm trying to get a movie made. I'm trying to earn a living. Taking care of my family, as I know you are, and just all kinds of dynamics going on. So I'm happy to be alive.
Well, I'm happy to have you here with me, and we're going to cover all of that. First, let's start with your impressions. When did you realize you had a special talent for that, and do you have a favorite?
Well, no, I like to do impressions. I've done it all my life. I didn't really think too much about it. It was part of growing up to me. My mother's an actress, and so she kind of didn't teach me how to do impressions, but she taught me to listen to other people and to duplicate accents and appreciate, I guess would be the word, other people, including famous people, but also just people around us, you know? Yeah. So... I didn't pursue it as a career, but it has become a large part of my career to do that. I think of myself as an actor, and I had some ambivalence about, not ambivalence, but the confusion about whether to become an actor or a visual artist for a long time, because I enjoyed both, and I was trained to some degree in both. And I actually went down the path of becoming a painter, a realist oil painter, for quite a while when I was in my 20s, 19, 20, 21, 22. Lived in Spain, really, really pursued it. And then made a big shift and went back to acting because I felt like it would be more social and better for me to be amongst a lot of people than just off on my own, endlessly painting and creating my own worlds and stuff. And I do find my privacy precious, and I am a solitary person. Sometimes very comfortable being alone or traveling alone, even though I'm a family guy. I don't mind my alone time, but I didn't want to make it my whole career. You know, that just seemed a little wrongheaded to me. So that's when I shifted over to acting. And then again, I to answer your question, the impressions thing, I wasn't tremendously confident about until I had entered into the world of other actors and auditions and things like that and scored in that area early on. And I realized, well, my overblown opinion of myself is not completely unjustified. Put it that way.
Yeah. Well, so when did you start to kind of maybe incorporate them? Like, well, let me ask you this. In acting, obviously, when you go into audition, most of the time, maybe they let you know what they're kind of looking for. But with all of the options that you have with the dialects that you're able to master and what have you, do you sometimes find yourself
trying to make it your own in an audition, or do you maybe try to help after you've gotten a role, say, hey, I can do this too? What do you think?
Every role is different, but when it's just a character part, I find that the impressions don't really help particularly, unless I'm playing a famous person who existed and whom I could research, which I've
Like Phil
done,
Donahue.
like Phil Donahue or the Senator James Gurney in Gaslit, or I don't know. Occasionally, I've played people that have walked this earth, and so if there's any video out on them, I will check it out, but. Acting, and you say, do you do what they're looking for? Often, producers, productions, even writer creators don't exactly know what they're looking for. They have a kind of an idea, and they're hoping someone will come along and be the key to open that door. And that's the kind of exciting game of it is figuring out a blend of, well, I see what they seem to be wanting, but what do I think would be good? That still fulfills that, and yet is not something that another actor would deliver. So it's a game, it's a little like roulette, but a tiny bit more skill than roulette.
You've blown up on social media. I mean, is that, I was going to ask down this question a little bit later, but since we're kind of, it's triggered my mind here. And like, I'm sure you're getting offers because of people finding you on social media, doing all your impressions. Has that led to jobs in different ways?
It has. It's not everything and it's not overwhelming, but yeah, I do get opportunities. I've gotten some wonderful opportunities because of my social media presence, because I dared to create and put stuff up for the world to digest. I have had people who appreciated the effort and were inspired in one way or another to collaborate. I did in 2012, I was the first time I really blew up on social media. And had a legitimately viral video on YouTube called Shakespeare and Celebrity Voices, and it went it went to 500,000 very quickly, which in those days was a big deal. So I got contacted by a young man who was a filmmaker, and he had a web series that he was doing, and his name's Ben Shelton. And I went, Shelton, that's a familiar name in film. So this is Uncle Ron Shelton, this is a pretty big filmmaker who did White Mind. White Man Can't Jump and Bull Durham and a lot of other things. So I met with Ben, his nephew, and I liked him. And we did one episode of something together, a series that he was working on, a web series. I don't think it paid anything, or maybe it was, $50 or something like that, but gave me an opportunity to see what he was like. And then I pitched him, hey, we should do more things together, which eventually culminated in an actual TV series that we did together. Called Impress Me. So, had I not done that video, had he not seen it, so that's why it keeps me producing more and more things. Just recently, because of my impression of Patrick Stewart, which I inflict on people as often as I can,
Please do.
I received an offer from a company that wanted to work with an actor who could do Patrick Stewart very well and look like Patrick Stewart is even better. Some of your listening audience will not appreciate the fact that I actually resemble Patrick Stewart quite a bit. The older I get and the handsomer he gets, the more we look like one another. In any case, I managed to get a job working on some YouTube videos promoting a kind of a healthcare product that also wound up with me working with William Shatner, Jonathan Frakes, and Jerry Ryan from the Star Trek universe. So, those are sweet little things that come along, and they can be those things can be traced directly back to what I've been doing with socials. And then goofy things happen, like the other day on Priceline, I'm trying to book some tickets to Europe later this year to go to a film festival that I have a film in, and the fellow at the other end of the line who had a very strong accent, as sometimes people do when you're talking to them online. And here I'm not appropriating this accent. I leave it to him entirely, but I'm borrowing it for just a minute to tell the story. He says to me, "What is your name, sir?" And I say, "Well, I'm Jim Meskimen." And he says, "Oh, do you know anybody else by that name?" I said, "Well, not really. I mean, I know there are people that have that name." He said, "Because there's a famous actor that has the name Jim Meskimen, and I wonder if you." Anyway, I said, "Well, that's me." And he went, "Oh my goodness, sir!" And he was very blown out, and he helped me very assiduously after that. have no idea where in the world he was, but for some reason he knew my name and was a fan from the socials. So that was very cute.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I'm sure that will continue to happen in different ways.
I'm sure going to do my damnedest to make sure it
Whether they
doesn't
like it or
hurt.
not.
Whether they like it or not. No, but mostly people go, "Hey, aren't you on? Haven't I seen you on something? Aren't you that impressionist?" They don't say, "Hey, are you Jim Meskimen? Or I know your name." That's a new kind of a level of something, because Jim Meskimen is not the easiest name to remember. I sometimes forget it myself.
Well, I've seen a lot of your different shows that you've been in before I kind of realized who you were, and now that I do. And you're a little bit of a chameleon in some ways too, which is good, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to be useful. So, I'm trying to help companies and products and productions, and I'm trying to also explore what it's like to be an artist and to express myself in as many ways as I can. You mentioned I trained as an artist. I was a cartoonist illustrator. That's how I supported myself in New York before I started hitting it big in commercials. And I still love to draw and paint today. I try to discipline myself and not do it quite as often as I'd like to, because it's not my business right now. But I try to integrate it in with my own promotion. I'll just sort of draw something and stick it up online, and people like it. And I design T-shirts that people can buy and all kinds of crazy stuff like that.
No, I love
I'm a
that. I mean,
very
meeting can
fortunate
be.
guy in that I consider myself very fortunate, very grateful, because I have a lot of avenues of creativity, and I've either earned or finagled some way to keep operating on these urges I have.
Well, I can relate because I have a lot of different creative pursuits and things that I enjoy myself, and it really makes life richer. I mean, I'm sure I'm speaking for you when I say that.
Are you a musician?
I dabble in guitar. I actually made my own short film about 15 years ago called Guitar Man, where I play a street guitarist playing Delta blues. But
Oh man, awesome.
I like do a little poetry and write books and the podcast and
Wow,
but
that's
yeah, no, I mean,
fantastic.
yeah,
It's
it's
great. It's
what
great.
makes
It's a
life
great.
enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to wind up the end of the life, going, "God, I wish I'd done this, and I wish I'd done that." And you got a whole laundry list of things, projects that got started and didn't go to fruition. That just seems too miserable.
Yeah, I agree. So you come from an acting family. You had mentioned your mother earlier, and for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with your mom, she is Marion Ross, and she played Mrs. Cunningham on Happy Days. Do you have any memories as a child watching her perform in that show, or the experience of her being on that show?
Oh, many. I mean, I was but I think when they did the pilot, I was probably 9 or 10, or
Okay.
even older, maybe 11 or 12. And then it was a very slow ramp up to becoming a series. And then another little ramp up to becoming a hit series, because things operated at a different pace back then. And Happy Days in particular was kind of herky jerky, because the pilot didn't sell initially, and then there was a long waiting period where Ron Howard had to do American Graffiti, and that had to become a hit, and Michael Eisner had to remember, "Don't we have a pilot here somewhere gathering dust that has Ron Howard in the 50s?"
I did not
So there
know
was this
that.
big lag of nothing, and then it started to be again a going concern. And then after a couple of years, it really took off, and then it ran for 11 years total. So I experienced a lot of that time. I was cognizant, I was conscious, I was paying attention, and I had nothing to do with it particularly. But I would go as soon as I could drive at age 16. On Friday nights, I would go down, drive myself down to Paramount, and watch them tape as often as I could, because it was a party, man. It was incredible. It was a really fun show to watch them tape. They had a great group of people, great writers, just a great ensemble, and the whole group had been like a family. Gary Marshall was these shows, and the mood of these projects comes from the top. And Gary Marshall wasn't a really charming person. You've seen him in movies himself, and he did many interviews, and was a great screenwriter and an actor himself. And he wrote plays, and he did the sisters that directed. And he was a lovely guy. And so he sort of set the tone for a friendly, charitable and family kind of operation, which I mean, they played softball together in the off seasons, and
Wow.
I credit him with saving all those young men's lives. You know, they had all this easy money, and he sent them out on the road to play softball rather than let them hang out in Hollywood and stick
Wow.
things up their nose and stuff. So, it was a great thing to be a part of. And eventually, I got to be on the Happy Days set as an actor when Happy, and it turned out to be a very significant and memorable episode. It is the one from which we get the phrase "jump the shark,"
You were in
and
that episode?
I am a kid on the beach. I'm 17 years old. I'm a kid on the beach. I look really buff, and I'm running down the beach. And someone says, "Where are you guys going?" Potsy says, "Where are you going? Where are you guys going?" And I say, "They caught a shark out there. They're gonna pen up until Marineland can come and pick it up." So I give the initial exposition about the very famous shark.
I'm gonna have to look that up.
You can
You know
find it
what's
online.
No, that's interesting. Speaking of shows from the past, I love to watch the old westerns, and I saw your mom on The Lone Ranger recently. It's like, well, that's
Yeah,
cool. This is a young woman.
she's a lovely young woman. Yeah, she pops up on a lot of things. She was a working actress, and
Yeah.
that old Lone Ranger show, that's a real chestnut, that one. That's it's so speckled looking. At the film quality's gotten so terrible. But yeah, I see her now. Now I see her, and of course she's younger than I am in a lot of her career, and it's so impressive. Just the kind of chops that she brings to every role. I just have nothing but admiration for her. She worked very hard. She really is a dedicated actress. And that's part of one of the many things I learned from her. But I have to say, it was a hard transition for me to go from being a kind of a in an isolated kind of practice, which was painting and drawing. Painting and drawing are very solitary. And I was in college, and I also had this dealt with my problems in not the healthiest way. You know, I got into drugs for a while, and I was very keen on increasing my perceptions, which is the wonderful trap of drugs, because they increase your perceptions, and then later on they take more of your perceptions away than they gave you to begin with. So it's kind of like dealing with the mafia. So by the time I really had sort of committed to being an actor and had moved to New York and was like, all right, this is what I'm going to do, I had another obstacle to overcome, which was the stage fright and nervousness, the kind of the difficult obstacle that was posed by my transitioning into becoming a live performer instead of just a guy in a room making his art with nobody present. That was a big shift for me, and I found it very, very uncomfortable. And it even made me second guess the whole operation, because I thought, man, if it hurts this much, I'm not sure I'm really I'm not sure I have what it takes.
Why did you
And
choose New York instead of California?
California just seemed impenetrable to me, and New York was a new start, and it turned out to be a very good choice because of the way that the lifestyle there is set up. In other words, it's not just a one industry town. It's every industry in New York City, and in LA, it's difficult to find someone who isn't an actor or isn't writing a screenplay or isn't a struggling artist in some way. So, and I just have never I never found LA to be a very welcoming place to a newcomer. I didn't, it's very spread out. It's very sprawling, as you've been there. There's no center to it. You're not going to meet people on the street. Or if you do, they're not the kind of people you really want to meet. And in New York, you meet everybody on the street. Everybody is there. The rich, the poor, the hungover, everybody. And so I found it better. But as I say, I had this discomfort and this kind of conundrum and obstacle about, well, what do I do about this anxiety? Because that's what it was anxiety. And the way I got through it, a friend of mine told me about this book. Believe it or not, I read this book. You've heard of it, I'm sure, Dianetics, The Modern Science of Mental Health. Very famous book. It's been a bestseller since 1950 when it was written. And it lays out exactly why a person would get anxiety, why they'd get strange thoughts that wouldn't go away, why they would be self-critical, all these things that I was experiencing. And so I read that book, I put that book to work, I used the technique in it, I stopped doing drugs, and I gradually began to feel much more comfortable. And within a couple of years, I was earning my living as an actor.
Wow.
And then I was earning a really good living as an actor. So I credit that book as being a turnaround point for me that I could spot very directly and very, with a lot of confidence that, well, had I not done that, I
Yeah,
don't think I
that's
would have stayed in New York, and I don't think I would have become an actor. I think I would have done something a little more tamped down, a little more regular, a little more doop-de-doop-de-doo, you know?
well, you seem kind of similar to me in that, like, I'm kind of an outgoing introvert, and you probably are as well, but yet there's part of you that does feel like you want to be out there at times, kind of maybe on your own accord. I mean, I'm that way
My
a
own
little
terms,
bit,
yeah.
but and it is kind of it's a balance for sure. With all this happening now for you and the recognition you're getting and the views, does sometimes it feel heavy, or are you kind of like reveling in it?
Well, I have a nice kind of fame that is sort of similar to my mother's. My mom was a very well-known face and very beloved character. And so people would admire her, but they wouldn't necessarily glom all over her. You know, she wasn't Elvis. She wasn't Henry Winkler, for that matter. So, people were very polite and civil and friendly. And that's how I find most of the people that recognize me on the street or that run into me at things. There's a respect, there's a kind of a friendship. I got off a plane in Malta a couple years ago. I was there to shoot a movie. Malta is an island in the Mediterranean, beautiful place. And it was a long flight. I had to go to Munich, then I went to Malta, and then it's midnight, and I'm at baggage claim in Malta. And an older gentleman came up to me and he said, "My wife and I are big fans of yours on TikTok. And if we'd be delighted to show you around Malta. I can't do it this weekend because I'm having open heart surgery." I said, "You go ahead and do that." But the following week, we got together. His name is Frank Salt, lovely guy. He's a Maltese, a retired Maltese, a real estate agent, lives out there a gazillion miles away. Showed me around. We took a lovely gondola ride in the harbor there at Valletta, and it was like, phew. So that's a nice kind of fame. You know, that's not somebody coming up to you and saying, what another thing they could say.
Wow, that's amazing. That's awesome. That's awesome. That's got to be exciting to be flying all over the world for roles.
Yeah, and I'm not flying all over the world like every week, but I am.
Yeah.
That was an extraordinary.
Or the US.
And these days, there aren't so many location shoots. They've figured out a way to use technology now to I can go to a building in Culver City and it can look like I'm in the Caribbean, and it's completely convincing. So I'd rather go to the Caribbean, But this was an opportunity. It's a movie called Hungry, by the way, and it came out a few months ago. And it's an action survival thriller, which I haven't done a lot of. And I was a lead in this thing, and a lot of running and swimming and hiding and jumping and escaping. And we're being assaulted by a ravenous hippopotamus in the Louisiana Bayou. But rather than shooting the Louisiana Bayou, they took us to Malta. They built a special lagoon. And I'm so grateful they did because it was a really fun time.
That's
Malta was
wild.
beautiful.
Is it streaming anywhere yet, or
It's on Apple TV and Prime. Hungry is the
Okay.
name of the movie. Yeah.
Very
Check
cool.
it out. Check it out.
Do you have any favorite roles or memorable roles or experiences, whether it was a particular role or the certain actors that you worked with?
Oh, many. I mean, I've had a great career, right? So
Yes, you have.
I have wonderful, wonderful memories of working with Ed Harris on Apollo 13 when I was 40, a terrific movie to work on. Working on The Grinch, another Ron Howard film that was chock-a-block full of interesting memories because that was a very creative project. I mean, we all looked strange and we had costumes and makeup and, everything was right down to we had to learn how to walk in a certain way, and do the Whoville walk and, becoming another species essentially was a lot of fun.
I heard they had just one building shell that they use just for makeup for that film.
That's right. One sound stage,
One
one entire. It
soundstage.
wasn't the biggest sound stage, but it was big enough to hold 50 makeup people. And that's a lot of makeup people because they often have their table and the mirror and everything. And yeah, that was a great experience too. I got to work preliminary to that. They did a lot of makeup testing with Rick Baker, who's I don't know, won about a dozen Academy Awards for makeup. And so I got to see his studio a lot and work with other talented makeup people. As a sculptor, artist, painter myself, that was also just really super cool. Like, I was really into it, that craft.
All right, I'm gonna shift gears a little bit. How does your own, you seem some like someone who definitely tries to be the best version of himself. How does your own personal growth journey intersect with and affect your work and your projects?
Well, they're pretty inseparable. Thanks for the compliment. I have, as I say, when I got interested in Dianetics, I began to confront what are the things in life that, what are the things that people do to complicate their own lives? And, everybody's at a different kind of opinion about this, but I think most people eventually come around to the truth that we're kind of responsible for our own condition to a great degree. I mean, there are people that are struck by lightning. There are people that are kidnapped by pirates, and there are people that have mean bosses, and there's all kinds of shadings in between. But at the end of the day, we decided to take that job. We decided to go on that crazy trip. We decided to pick a fight with that person or not flow affinity to that person. And so, you begin to analyze, well, how could I, is there any way to get a little better? Is there any way to be a little more of an asset to the world than just sucking off of it, and so I have been on that pursuit a great deal. And Dianetics, as I say, helped me a lot with that, continues to help me to this day. I try to help other people a lot. I mentor other people. When I go to a set and work on a show, my job is to be helpful, to fulfill the director or the creator's dream, to come up with ideas, to add value to whatever it is. And sometimes that adding a value is just do your job, just say the words, just stand there where we want you to stand. Other times it's like, hey, could you know what we really need is somebody who is not going to who's going to keep a cool head and not going to have a lot of demands. And a lot not make people panic, because we're human beings. So even when we're working on a set, there's like things that come up, and people can be upset, or there can be arguments, or there can be creative differences. My job is to try to smooth the way, help everybody get their job done, and make the project as good as it could be. And I definitely learned that from watching my mom. For many years, I've heard people talk about her as being a person that was very positive, who helped them to do their job or helped them to do their best work by being encouraging. And that's like a very simple gift that we can give one another, I think. Acknowledgement, encouragement, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. Have you ever thought about directing?
I've directed audio stuff. I'm fully capable of doing that. Directing film is something that looks easy.
I didn't say that.
I mean, it looks easier than it is. Let me put it like that. There's a lot of facets to it, and the best ones do make it look easy. They just go around like Ron Howard goes around to, or here I'll do my Ron Howard impression because I've experienced it a lot, and he'll go around every department and talk to them in the way that they need, in the way that is their language. He'll talk to actors a certain way. He'll talk to the camera department a certain way. Or he'll talk to publicity a certain way. I mean, there's all these different languages and populations that you have to communicate with. And, to the degree that a person is a very good communicator, they can get a lot done. I imagine Christopher Nolan, we've heard Christopher Nolan quite often these days being interviewed about The Odyssey. And I think one thing about him that we can say with a great deal of confidence is that he can communicate very, very well, and that he can inspire people with his communication to do their best work. And $1 billion later, there you go.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? Gosh, how would Alfred Hitchcock approach that?
Alfred Hitchcock was probably also a very compelling director, and one wonders if the threat of murder and violence that permeates his work was also a hallmark of his directing style. I doubt it.
Do you, I mean, you're really quick on your feet, and I know that you, on your live shows, you have like 40 or 50 names behind you on the screen, and you ask somebody to come
Yeah.
up and pick a name, and you're gonna, you recite something, and then you'll have them switch, and you'll switch mid-year.
That's fun.
I mean, obviously, some of those are, you've already had those poems memorized, but I mean, you're very quick on your feet too. Do you find
Thank you.
yourself practicing? Yeah, you're welcome. Do you find yourself practicing a lot, or is it just through years of kind of just embodying what you're doing that you're just like prepared all the time?
I'm just kind of prepared all the time because my lifestyle, for better or for worse, my lifestyle, it consists of a lot of rapid changes. And my pleasure is to, and ever since I was a little boy, was not to be locked into one personality. And that may sound, clinical, like a problem. And I don't think it is, but I think it's great when you can shift viewpoints and suddenly start to communicate like someone completely different. I think it's a marvelous gift. And for me, it's enormous freedom to say the things that I want to say. If I lack the vocabulary or I lack the interest in saying it as myself, I can say it as whoever this person is. I don't even know who this person is. Doesn't matter, it's someone from the north of England, or if I want to be Sam Elliott, I could just switch gears right on a dime. And I also, I've created a life now where my daughter will come up to me, and she's sort of in charge of my social media, and she will pounce on me and say, "Hey, Dad, do an impression of Burgess Meredith changing the license plate on his car," and I just have to do it, And so I do like improv. I like the challenge. I like. I think everybody has the ability to come up with ideas very quickly. The thing that stops us from coming up with ideas is self-invalidation more often than not, self-criticism. We put the brakes on ourselves, and that becomes a habit. And most people are walking around in that kind of world where they're like hemmed in. They're like, "I'll go this way. No, I better not. I'll go this way. No, I better not. I'll go all the way over here. No, I'll just go this way." And they're sort of stumping along in life. Not fulfilling their potential. And if you design a life for yourself where you're reaching a little bit more and trying things and having giving yourself a challenge, like this is what creative people do. They go, "Gosh, I've got an hour to kill. I have nothing to do. I could write a song. I mean, I'm not a songwriter, but I can write a song. I can write verse. I can figure out words that rhyme. I can think of something to say, or I can be like a Sheryl Crow and write a song that has no rhymes in it. Whatever. But you give yourself a challenge. Like there's been times on an airplane where I'm like, "Well, I've got 4 hours. Maybe I should just write a story." And I like ask my mind, "What's a story?" It would be like going to ChatGPT these days, which is just an external mind. And you go, "Tell me a story about a skunk that decides to run for office in the forest and meets a guy." Okay. And then it starts to roll out. Well, your mind is capable of doing the same thing, I discovered. You can just do the same thing. You say, "Well, let me think about a poem about a circus and how a circus is kind of like a family and all the people in it are like acrobats." Boom. If you just sit and listen to what your mind comes up with and not criticize it and don't stop it as it comes in, you may wind up with something really delightful. It'll definitely be yours. It'll definitely come from you and your experience and your sensibilities. It's not coming from Mars. It's not coming from ChatGPT either,
No,
which
I mean
is
that's,
another plus.
yeah, I mean, that's how I came up with my children's books. I mean, I didn't even plan on making them kids' book 15, 20 years ago. It was just a mind exercise to put this little rhyming story together, and then it kept coming together, and now we're trying to pitch one as a cartoon. So you never
That's
know.
where ideas come from. I promise you, the J.K. Rowling is another great example. Everybody knows now because she's a billionaire and has castles. But she was a chick in a laundromat with a yellow legal pad. And it's not formidable weaponry. And yet it is because it is the impetus for, an entire Niagara of wonderful ideas.
Absolutely. Speaking of the whole self-esteem thing and self-worthiness, I've had to work through that myself quite a bit. I think everybody does at some level or another. And did that, I know the stage fright thing, but I mean, did that low self-esteem ever affect your creativity and maybe you moving forward on something?
Absolutely. And I've had to learn how to vanquish it, because you get hit, particularly when you really make a commitment to doing something in the arts, as you start to get, then the naysayers come out because they had nothing to say nay about before. Now that you're doing something, they go, oh, something to say nay about. Hooray. And they pounce on you. And some of them are really evil and awful. And some of them are just kind of, it's a bad habit for them. That's how they were treated and they just pass it along. So I've had to learn how to have the discipline to always have confidence in myself, to not disparage myself. And that stretches over to others, other creative people. I don't disparage other creative people. I don't natter about my fellow actors. I don't look at a work of art and try to find its flaws first. I don't watch a movie and go, ah, that's a piece of crap. I try to see what's good in something. And then that's the way I treat myself as well, in my own works of art. And I'm honest about it. I know when I have not quite reached what I want to reach as an effect in a film or in a piece of writing or a piece of art. But I don't believe in failure. I believe that you ha just haven't carried through sufficiently to accomplish something.
Yeah, and we gotta start somewhere, and not everything's gonna be nothing's perfect first time we do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Even Paul McCartney, famously dreamed yesterday. It was a song that came complete to him in his mind. Woke up the next morning and wrote it down, and said to John, "Look, I don't know if this is any good or not, but." And he called it scrambled eggs, right? Scrambled eggs. Do 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 do. And he had to perfect that too and make that the incredible song that it is.
Well, it's something that I'd like to, I try to be myself, and I definitely know that you're doing it. By our own struggles and journey and sharing it gives other people permission to do the same thing and to maybe take a chance and to step into a goal or a dream or something that maybe excites them. And so I applaud you for that too.
We all can, we can encourage each other. A bit. Life on the planet is really pretty crazy, right? But to the degree that it's comfortable and sweet and positive and inspiring, it is that degree to which we all decide, we're in this together. Let's see if we can help one another. And that's, at the end of the day, it makes everybody feel a lot better than figuring out, because there are people in the world that are going, how many people could I kill with the least amount of effort? And there are those types, but we're not, the planet isn't crawling with those types of people. They're a very isolated group and they're making their lives miserable for one another. And, for the rest of us, let's figure out a way to have a nice afternoon together. I think whenever I go to a concert or something, I go to the Hollywood Bowl and see some great artists. And I think, well, here are 17,000 people. That's what they that holds the Hollywood Bowl holds 17,000 people. Here are 17,000 people who are not actively engaged in trying to screw each other or damage each other's property or degrade one another. They are just having a great time together, listening to some music. It's just beautiful. It's so simple. Not that we should all just sit around and pluck on lutes all day long, but let's dedicate some of our time to making the world a nicer place. It's actually pretty simple.
Do other people's opinions of your work or art affect you? And it may have changed through the years. I don't know.
Yeah, it used to affect me a lot more. Now I keep my own counsel to quite some degree. I am interested in, I have a lot of successful people do this. They have a small circle of friends that they will share certain things. Like I have a screenplay and I haven't sent it all over the world. I've sent it to very specific people and I'm always a little careful because we respond to art in a very personal way. And Especially with a screenplay or a story or something, they see it in their mind a certain way, and maybe that's not the way you saw it, or maybe that's not what you want to say, and they have a good idea about what you could do with that, and but I'm no longer like tyrannized by it or feel like, oh, they spotted me, I was wrong and I was cheap and they saw through it, and I don't have those kinds of worries anymore.
That's good.
I just, I will choose people like that. I'll say, will you read this, and I'd really like to know what you think. And that's legitimate. It's like, I honestly would like to know what they think about it. And I may change it, I may not, based on what they say. But at least I know I'm not going to get ambushed by their own failures or their own frustrations
Wounds,
at creating.
I know, and I'm very proud of everything I've done, but I know for a while I used to create for validation. Did that ever happen for you?
Sure, I still do. I think that's fine.
Yeah, it's
I create to make money. I create to get admiration, validation. I create because it's just fun. I mean, all the voices that I do, for example, I'm interested in impressions for sure, and I like to test myself, but I do like to reach out to people. I want to reach out to people with something that they appreciate and that they understand and that they can identify and get some pleasure from. And it's nice to have the likes and the follows and all that stuff on social media, which is a kind of a new metric that we can enjoy. And sometimes, very rarely, but sometimes I get people who are disparaging, and say, oh, that doesn't sound like him, or yeah, that one needs work. I like that one. Yeah, that one needs work, or don't quit your day job. But there's so few and far between. And I usually respond, or I often respond with this funny line I heard that some, I don't know if he was a symphony conductor or a composer or something years ago in the last century, said some, there was a big, a big concert, and most of the crowd was applauding and on their feet. And one guy said, that was terrible. And the composer said, I agree with you, but who are we against so many?
God. Well, you're making people's days brighter. You're putting a smile on your face. I mean, you make me smile and laugh when you're doing your impressions and stuff. And
I'm
that's
so
just
glad. Oh, it's important to me. And when I do Robin Williams, I know people like it a lot. They cheer up, or they tear up, or they cheer and tear up.
yeah.
It's a weird combination. There's probably a German word for it. It's probably about a mile long. Anyway, yeah, it's a fun gift to be able to share with people. I'm just trying to find more ways to share it and more ways to, help keep my own operations going and find more opportunities and make a lot of noise,
That's amazing. So we talked about this before. I would love it if you wanted to share a poem or two and
Yeah.
you wrote, and you're welcome to do it in a voice or not, or whatever you decide is fine with me.
Yeah,
But
I've got several
you're very
here.
talented. Cool.
Yeah, this one I'll read in my own voice. I've got one that, which is definitely from my viewpoint. I've got another one I could do in various voices. But this was talking, you're talking about criticism and people throwing shade on you. And when I was a kid, it really pestered me when grown-ups would be, critical. And it didn't happen very often, but boy, you remember the times they did. And this poem is called On All the Time. When I was just a boy of 9, when grown-ups gathered for party time, I'd take it on to entertain, do voices, clown, and I'd take pains to make best efforts to amuse, to ease their weary grown-up blues. For adults seemed such a weary lot whom joys of childhood had forgot. But frequently, instead of praise or tolerance, I was amazed to hear, as if it were a crime, "Kid, must you be on all the time?" That comment always stopped me dead. I couldn't get it through my head why anybody would object or treat me with such disrespect. On all the time? We've barely met. Just how impatient can you get? I'm not some infant smeared with mud. I've got show business in my blood. Don't scold, consider my intent. To spoil your evening, I'm not bent. I'm from a family of actors, and honestly, I need the practice. Though I should have ignored that wheeze, I factored in my goal to please and backed off from performing, though it cut the legs out from my show. And so, convinced of my mistake, I rapidly applied the brakes, pulled myself over to the verge, and parked my own creative urge. The problem is, once stopped, my friends, it's hard to get in gear again after an interrupted flow, as any young aspirant knows. Truth is, my critic lacked the skill, or even worse than that, the will to entertain, divert, or charm, and factually meant me harm. As murder's too overt, you see, he sought to murder my esprit. The goodness which a child bestows, he couldn't bear to just let grow. It went against his basic plan to subjugate his fellow man. To him, a child should be as silent as any undertaker's client, who never speaks or laughs or coughs, but is quite permanently off. Eventually, I grew to find such types quite pitiful. Never mind, the laugh's on him. For all his pains, I'm on for good and shall remain.
Wow. Thank you. That was wonderful. And it's just so, I don't know. It's just so many people need to hear that and just be reminded, you know what I mean? That just it's so important to be ourselves
Yeah, thank you.
and not let other
Yeah.
people harsh our buzz.
I know. Yeah, I know. It's like, why would you ever say that to a little kid? It's so weird. Yeah, it's one of those things I held on for it held on to for decades, and then until I could finally write that little rebuttal. So here's one that I wrote recently, which I'll do in a variety of voices. The first one being Sir Patrick Stewart. I'll do it in Sir Pat, then Christopher Walken, Tommy Lee Jones, Woody Allen, Matthew McConaughey, and Robin Williams. Here we go. It's called Against Gravity. There's only one battle we fight. We're engaged in it, morning till night. It's the war against gravity, that bottomless cavity, that thing that inhibits our flight. Every artist that's sculpted in stone, every Eskimo carving in bone, has spent their existence deploying resistance to the pole that won't leave them alone. Whether weightlifter, pilot, or chef, will we strive to become more adept? Limitations encountered keep pushing us downward and leave us completely bereft. We're all playing the identical game, though referred to by various names, whether making glass shiny or implanting one's hiney. The goal to expand is just the same. Any impulse to rise is well spent. We're intended to soar and ascend. Fight gravity's urge. Don't agree to submerge. Make the most of this life you've been lent. This limerick's about what man confronts while at war on several fronts. Opportunities missed? Hope nobody's pissed. Not one dirty joke in the bunch. I'll make it up to you next time. Triple entendres all around. On me, my treat. Yeah, it's fun. When I was a kid, we used to read these books. It was poems by, I don't know how his name is actually pronounced, Hilaire or Hilary Belloc. Charming little ditties, little
Yeah.
simple little verses, cautionary tales, and they were very irreverent and funny. And I used to read those and think, this is just swell. So.
Yeah. Do you find writing poetry kind of helps you? It's kind of like a form of therapy or just, a journaling, et cetera. I mean, I definitely do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Helps you kind of put your thoughts together and make decisions about things and share your ideas with people in a way that most people don't object to. And it's all, life can be very therapeutic. Just living life can, if you're conscious, if you're aware of what's going on, you're learning. And the learning releases certain anxieties and so forth. And it's just that when we make ourselves unconscious, that's where we run into trouble. If we get too dull, or if we dull ourselves, or if we take drugs, or if we do other unhealthy things. Life is still going on, but we're missing it. And it's going on kind of subconsciously, and that really stirs the pot in a not a very pleasant way.
No, I agree. I've always tried to be the observer in my own life, but we all have our blind spots. But as you just mentioned, the clearer that we can keep our channels, the better off we're going to be.
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of, these days there's a lot of unawareness being sold, video games and watching TV and taking drugs and drinking, and I understand it. We're all in, people are in various degrees of pain. But you have to kind of push yourself and discipline yourself to not always be seeking unawareness. There's
Yes.
too much of it being sold.
Well, yes. Yeah. You got to rise above
Yep.
it. What are some things you wish you could tell your 20-year-old self?
To the degree that I was doing some things right, I would tell myself, yeah, do more of that.
Okay.
Because there were things I was doing that were right. And those are the ones that pulled me through. I would say, keep being creative, keep being creative, keep sharing your work, keep pushing yourself to be a performer and reach out to people. And yeah, don't like I was just saying, don't dodge life. Don't try to hack it or avoid it, but really confront what it is, And I still tell myself that, let's focus on what's actually really important right now. Let's figure that out and not let the automatic aspects of our life just sort of take over, because there's a lot of automaticity in living that you can kind of lean on, and later on you go, wow, I wish I hadn't just done that thing I always do. I wish I'd actually seen the moment for what it was,
What does success mean to you?
Well, success is one of these things that can be very expansive. There are small successes, and depending on where you are with your health and with your career and with your family dynamics and your outreach into the society, you want your successes are measured by larger boundaries. If a person is very ill or they've been injured, it's a success to get out of bed and walk across the room. That's a success. Okay. It doesn't mean that just because another guy won the Pulitzer Prize that you haven't had a success. You have had a success in your level of the game. I think we all strive to have successes that influence not just our own small area, but also the people around us. If we could have a success that helps our family, that helps our groups, our overall nation, I dare say. I mean, we think about artists like, I don't know, Lady Gaga, Michael Jackson, Paul McCartney. These people have had successes that thousands of people benefit from in a small way or in a large way. Some people make a lot of money off of it. Lady Gaga's manager is probably doing just fine. And all her fans and her audiences, Taylor Swift, all those people that love Taylor Swift, they're getting benefit. So her successes influence lots of people. And that's the kind of success that I strive for, not for all the grand things that I'm going to receive, but also the fact that, okay, I'll do okay, I'll have some wins, and then maybe I can influence a lot of other people too, and they can all have wins and have a smile on their face or have a little more confidence or a little better future or a little more survival. Success is very linked to the ability to survive well. And so that's what it means to me.
Nice. Thank you. We're out of time, my friend. I'm sorry, but where can people find you? And I'm gonna have all this information in the show notes too.
I'm very difficult to find. I'm
Yeah,
very aloof. Yeah, I'm part of the Witness Protection Program. I'm an influencer for the Witness Protection. You can find me on YouTube. I got a wonderful YouTube channel. I've got Instagram. I'm feeding constantly at Jimpressions. If you just look up Jimpressions, that's kind of my handle for a lot of things.
Okay.
Also, my website, jimeskiman.com. I got all kinds of stuff there. I welcome all your listeners and your viewers. And I got lots of fun things. I have online courses as well in voiceover, impressions, in working in show business and keeping a career going. Those are all available. I have a cartoon contest where I draw a cartoon and people get to caption it and they can win a prize. And, I got all kinds of fun stuff going on.
You have a wonderful community there, yeah. Well,
Thank you.
yeah, thank you. And I just look forward to seeing you in so many other roles coming up and watching you on social media and just doing what you do to make the world a better place.
Thank you. Yeah, hopefully you'll see me on Landman again, Paramount Plus series that I've been on a few times, and I'm hoping to
Yes,
come back and
you play
work
the
with you.
lawyer.
I did with Billy Bob Thornton. I played the family lawyer, and he broke a bottle over my head in season two, but I don't hold it against him.
I remember that. That must have been a fun role.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's challenging. It's challenging, but working with great actors is. Man, oh man, that's fun because they're like on it, they're just terrific. You can appreciate their professionalism and their creativity. It's the best.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Brian.
You're
Nice
welcome.
talking to you.
You too. You take care.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Spark. To learn more about me, G. Brian Benson, as well as this week's amazing guest, please visit the show notes or go to gbrianbenson.com. We love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, be well, be creative, and always be yourself.